We do have a question here. Oh, raised hand. Let's see. This is Nathan Risser. Go ahead, Nathan. Nathan from Argus Media. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, everyone. It's Nathan. I'm the downstream news reporter at Argus Media based out of Houston, Texas. Thanks for all the information. And I've got two questions. So the first one is, any of these groups, whether it's EIP or the various water keepers, have you been engaging directly with any of the refineries or corporations? And if so, how have they responded to your calls for regulation or self-regulation in terms of pollutant discharges? And then the second kind of related question is, obviously, the big report you put out earlier this year is very much, you know, a naming and shaming list of the worst polluters on this front. But are there any facilities or operators where they're actually exhibiting sort of best in class policy here, and prior to any potential regulation coming in, they're actually implementing this technology you're speaking out about? So just to kind of to balance both sides, are there some people who are exhibiting best in class, you know, environmental management of their facilities at the moment? Thank you.
Thanks for your question. Jen Duggan from EIP, I'll try that one to you. Do you know of any good companies or examples? Are some refineries or other industries doing a good job, better than the others, that could be an example for the other industries?
Well, I think the point to make here is that these technologies that we're talking about, whether it's to reduce nitrogen or to reduce heavy metals, or PFAS or other contaminants, they are in use at plants across the country. And for denitrification, for example, technology, many municipal plants are required to use that technology to reduce nitrogen pollution due to water quality standards or impairments in the waters that they discharge to. And we do know that some refineries that we identified in our recent report are doing a better job at reducing nitrogen because they are required to comply with water quality-based limits. So there are examples where we have refineries and other facilities that are doing a better job because, you know, they've been required to because of specific water quality concerns. But the lawsuit here is targeted at raising the floor for everyone. You know, these are mandatory technology-based requirements that are supposed to apply for all of these facilities across the board. And that's what this lawsuit is targeting.
The other part of his question was about, have we heard from industry at all about our concerns? Have we had an interface with them?
Well, I think that we've been, you know, we started identifying these significant issues with EPA back in 2021, and we certainly engage in conversations with individual facilities in a number of different ways. But the requirement here is really on EPA to do their job to set these requirements that apply across the board. And that's what we're focused on here, is holding EPA accountable to do what they were required to do 50 years ago.
We have a question here from Michael Bloom. Michael, do you want to say your question out loud, or should I read it? Are you there, Michael? Michael Bloom?
Yeah, thanks for that. Just wanted to, partly it's just kind of just elaborating a little bit more, if you could, on the difference between the sort of what I consider to be kind of the baseline technology-based limits, you know, based on treatment technologies, and how important they were at the beginning, but then contrast that with the water quality-based effluent limits that most of the permits are written on now. So for example, like total dissolved solids, you know, it depending on the discharge location, you know, that's basically salt. So there may be a water quality based limit that would allow for more of the total dissolved solids to be discharged. That would be different maybe from a technology based approach. So I just wanted to kind of understand a little bit better whether you see, I guess whether the group sees technology-based limits playing an important role when it feels like a lot of the permits are written based on water quality nowadays. Thanks.
Thanks. Jen, do you want to try that one?
Sure. I think the first thing that I would note is that we see very few permits that actually have water quality-based effluent limits. There are many pollutants that a state may not have set water quality standards for, or they are not set in permits themselves. What we have found is that if there is not a limit, you know, if the EPA hasn't set these technology-based effluent limits for a pollutant, it is very rare that a state will include a limit based on water quality. So that's why these standards are so important to get right. This is the baseline. And when EPA doesn't update and set these limits based on modern technology, states are not doing that.
All right, thanks so much. Any other questions from reporters? Raise your hand or drop a question into the chat session if you happen to have a question. Yep, we have one more question here. Who is this? This is Phoebe Quinton. Phoebe, unmute yourself and what publication are you from? Can you unmute yourself, Phoebe? Phoebe Quinton? Okay, it looks like her mic isn't working. In any event, any other questions? Or Phoebe, you can drop your question into the chat session and we can read it if you're having trouble with your mic. Any other questions for our panel here? Nathan Risser, another question. Go ahead, Nathan. Why don't you unmute yourself, Nathan?
Ah, here we go. Just a quick one. Feel free to just refer me to a report if it's in there. But in terms of absolute pollutant levels over time, how have they changed? Because the only data I've seen is, you know, the current levels at the moment, but how have these key factors, nitrogen, nickel, selenium, and total dissolvables, I can't remember the exact term, how has that changed maybe over the last 5, 10 years, just to get a better idea of if it's getting worse or better, and just please pass it on to a report if that's all somewhere you can email on to me.
Jen, do you have a sense of any time change and things have gotten better or worse from the industry?
I think we actually have Kira on the line.
Oh, Kira.
And can help answer that question.
Kira is our research manager. Kira, do you have any thoughts about change over time?
Sorry. Our report from earlier this year does not look at trends over time. I'm happy to follow up with you afterwards to see if we can find some additional data. We had calculated facility level pollution loads from these facilities using permit applications and, monitoring reports that facilities had submitted. I don't know if EPA has earlier reports kind of quantifying pollution loads, but we don't have anything prior to 2021. But happy to follow up after.
All right. We have Alejandra Martinez of the Texas Tribune joining us. Alejandra, do you have any questions for our panel? Or any other reporters have any questions? Oh, we have new, let's see, we have a raised hand here. Jay Wolf, which publication are you from?
Hi, my name is Jessica Wolf. I'm a reporter with the San Francisco Examiner, and I can sort of follow up. I think Phoebe and I, who's at KQED, had a few of the same questions. I'm happy to read hers as well, because I think ours piggybacks off one another. But this question is for Baykeeper, and wondering, beyond selenium in San Francisco Bay, are there other pollutants that Baykeeper is particularly worried about coming from these refineries? Phoebe's question was, are there some examples of releases in the Bay Area that you believe the EPA did not act on? And then secondarily, I have a question about violations. And so I guess I'm curious to know if they're already in violation of certain permits, how hard it will be for them to sort of come into regulation and be compliant with permits even if you're saying these permits, the threshold is too low.
Eric Buescher, you want to try at that?
Yeah, thanks, Jessica and Phoebe both. So two answers in terms of your first question and the specific impact on San Francisco Bay. I mean, we're talking about seven heavily polluting industries at issue in the litigation. And because this would apply right nationwide, it applies throughout the watershed here in California. And there is impact from each of those industries in some form, right, throughout our watershed, whether that is in the Bay specifically or upstream in other communities along the Sacramento or San Joaquin Rivers or in the Delta. In terms of specifics on the Bay, one of the things that we're concerned about based on our experience with the harmful algal bloom last summer is the nutrient load that exists in San Francisco Bay. And most of the industries we're talking about, including the refining industries, the technological limits don't address most of those nutrients. So nitrogen or phosphorus and things like that, that can contribute to the causes of those harmful algal blooms, make them more likely or more frequent in the future. So that would be one of the other specific impacts that we're concerned about. And then in terms of, you know, enforcement, the enforcement process tends to be, at least here, kind of frustratingly slow. And like Kristen said earlier, you know, there's a lot of friendliness between the regulator and the industry. And so, right, like I said earlier, the regional board in using the water quality standard for selenium and setting that standard and determining how much selenium the refineries were going to be allowed to discharge under the permits, essentially asked the refineries, how much have you been discharging? And then set the limit there. And right, as a water quality standard, that's inadequate. We've been trying to get that improved. That's a slow process. But having these technologically based limits included in permits like that would force the refineries to reduce the amount of those loads below where they had been discharging, you know, 10 to 20 years ago.
Thank you so much.
Okay, any other, go ahead.
Oh, Tom, I was just gonna note, I know Kira's gonna follow up with Nathan on his question directly, but I wanted to note two things. One, with respect to sort of the mass loadings for pollution from refineries, you know, we noted this in our report, but the average refineries are twice as large than they used to be when the standards were set. And I would also just note that there are some industries that are really poised for explosive growth from, you know, in within these industries. So just, you know, for example, we know that we have nitrogen fertilizer plants that are proposed that would significantly increase the production of fertilizer. And so that will definitely contribute to increased pollution loading. So if we're, you know, if you're tracking growth of these industries, that's going to correlate to increased loading unless EPA steps in and sets these really important baseline standards to make sure that these industries are compliant. They're using modern wastewater treatment controls.
All right. Does that answer your question? All right. Any other journalists with questions? Feel free to raise your hand or drop a note in the comment section. Okay. Well, thanks everyone for participating. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to call me anytime at 443-510-2574, Tom Pelton, or tpelton@environmentalintegrity.org. And we'll get back to you as quickly as we possibly can. We'll also post audio of this press conference on our website at www.environmentalintegrity.org if you want to use the audio from that. And thanks to all the participants, and have a great afternoon.